episode number 773, which is a prime number. That means there's only two factors, and we're going to be talking about the two factors that are involved in our lives this post-April 24th show for 2023. This is Father Voskin, and the next step begins now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to a 15th season of the Next Step podcast with Father Voskin. With these podcasts, Father Voskin provides a very distinct and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophyte. So we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Instead of mourning a genocide, stand up against one. That's been the motto. That's what we've been talking about for how many years? And you know what? I've been talking about it for so long that I just kind of assume that there's people listening, there's people who've heard it. But I was surprised. I was just so surprised how new it is to so many people. This idea that instead of mourning genocide, let's do something concrete about it. Well, welcome to The Next Step. Today we're going to be talking, it's sort of like a aftermath to the April 24th. One of the easiest days to be Armenian, of course, is April 24th. Everybody's Armenian on that day. And the hardest day, I think, is April 25th, all the way until April 23rd the next year. It's like people forget. Yeah, it becomes some kind of marginal issue. Something like what's the expression? On your shirt sleeve, there used to be an expression like that. He wears it on his shirt sleeve. And I think Armenianness comes like that too. Of course, that's a huge, huge, huge judgment statement. I don't want to get into that because they're arguable. I think everybody without exception tries their best. And I'm not here to put down anybody. But there is something about people who have no knowledge about it coming out and becoming these world they become the spokespeople for something as tragic and huge as genocide. You know what it's like? It's like there's that guy. I can't remember the name of the newspaper. It was a rag. I think it still comes out. But anyway, it's perfect stuff to line your birdcage with. Let me say that, okay? In that respect, it's quality newspaper. But other than that, it's just a rag sheet. And what this guy does, it's like Armenian International something. The name escapes me. It's probably not important anyway. No sense giving extra publicity. But he puts this out. And at the top of the page, at the top of the front cover, what does it say? The most critically acclaimed Armenian newspaper, the largest circulation in the world. Well, it's the most critically acclaimed because he says so. It's the largest circulation because he throws it out. He gives it out free at all the Armenian market stores. He mails it to you free. So it's got this never-ending funding from someplace, who knows where. And they throw it out at people, and people pick it up. And so it's got a large circulation, they claim. But it's this idea of self-promotion, self-recognition. I mean, the guy who runs it, I'm having a hard time remembering his name even. It's got a double consonant. And anyway, whatever. He claims he's a journalist. Yeah, yellow journalist. He doesn't say that, but he is basically, it's yellow journalism, cutting down other people. And he compares himself to legitimate journalists. Like, he'll find a journalist and he'll say, my colleague, or also a journalist. Yeah, like, who are you? Yeah, it's like the Jews when they get up and they say, we're the chosen people. Okay, yeah, that's fine. That's beautiful that you claim a chosen people, but you're the ones claiming that. It's in the Hebrew scriptures, okay? So it's like, who's saying it? It's a part of your tradition that you are chosen people. It's part of this man's tradition that he is critically acclaimed, or that he's a journalist, you know? It's like you put it up on your masthead and you think like, okay, now I can do it. Well, it's the same thing with the church. You know, you got people coming around and saying, oh yeah, the church should do this, that, that. Who are you? Have we ever seen your face in the church? Do you really care about it? No, it's one of those things that, you know, yeah, we're the first Christian people, therefore I am part of this and I could criticize this. And they do. And the reason I'm saying this is, yes, everybody has their own ivory tower that they stand in. But when it comes to church, I'm very sensitive about it. When it comes to Armenian situations, I'm very sensitive about it because I'm in it. You know, I get so many people who come up to me and they start complaining about the churches this way, that way. You know what? I bought into this church, and this to me is the way the church is. And I try to work from within. Yes, there's a lot of problems. There's a lot of problems in the church, in any major institution, especially an institution that's been around for 2,000 years. But we're all in there and we're all trying to do something about it. Now, you know, when I buy into the church, when I became a priest, I realized that I'm a priest. I'm not the bishop. I'm not the Catholicos. And I have no aspiration to be a bishop. I have no aspiration to be a Catholicos. I realize that I'm on the front line. I'm dealing with the people as a priest. And it's no different than any organization that has a hierarchy, just like the military does, right? When you're a private, when you're a corporal, you're a sergeant, you're on the front lines over there, okay? You are not the general. You are not the lieutenant. You are on the front lines, and that's your job. If everybody does their job, we work together. And, you know, I have in our family, we have a captain, retired captain in the United States Navy. And we get together from holiday to holiday. They live in another city, and whenever we see him, it's always a pleasure to be with him. But he always talks about the political situation. But when it comes to the president, and I know his persuasion, when it comes to the president, he does not knock the president. Even though it's politically unaligned with his position, he doesn't knock him. And you may think like, oh, well, he's scared. No, it's a matter of understanding that military hierarchy. The president is the commander in chief of the military. That means he's the commander-in-chief of the Navy, as well as the Army, the Marines, the Air Force. That's the guy. And that's just the way it works. A lot of times people come up to me and they will talk about this or that inside of the church. Okay, now here's the big question. Are you in the church? So this guy, he starts complaining and ragging. And ragging is exactly the right word because he's got a rag sheet. And so he starts complaining about the church, this or that. Okay, that's fine. You have a right to do that. But who cares? Are you in the church? Do you go to the church? Do you care about the church? Do you have a faith in the church? Do you have a faith in the belief of the church? Would you recite the Nicene Creed for me, please? In other words, if you don't buy into the church, why are you complaining about it? Why are you complaining about it? Change the channel. I've said that many times, okay? I'm doing this podcast. I'm in the 15th year of this podcast. And people who write to me, people who send me these nasty, nasty letters, hey, you know what? You don't have to listen to it. If you don't like it, don't listen to it. I can't say turn the channel because that's kind of like old school. But we used to have a thing called radio and television, right? These, if you didn't like what was on, the programming that was on, you changed the channel. Well, with podcasting, it's a little bit different. But let's say it this way. Don't download me. Don't listen to it. Don't play the don't press the play button. But it's just interesting how people who have no knowledge or no care to even be in the church are the biggest critics of it. And it's the same thing when we get to April 24th. We've got people who get up and they talk. And one of the big things that I've been really working against all of my life, I want to say, but in particular over the last 30 to 40 years, has been to take a serious look at what we're saying on April 24th. We've got the world's attention. People are tuning in. People are listening. What is the message that we're sending out? Because it's a matter of utilizing the moment. Exploiting the moment. Yeah, let's say it, exploiting the moment. You've got people tuning in. What's the message? I remember a few years back in Hollywood, our friend Gregory Bailarian, very dear friend. We've done many, many projects. In fact, we're going to be doing another project in June together in Armenia. Artist like none other. He did a mural in Hollywood with a group of students. I believe it was from Alec Pilivos. And it's a beautiful, beautiful mural that really should have, like, just stopped everybody in their tracks. Down the street, some guy basically made a mural on another storefront. It was like a giant wall, basically painted black, if I remember right. It was like an arm with blood and guts, or what is it, veins coming out of it. And the big writing on there, "Our wounds are still open," you know. And of course, that's the one everybody is attracted to. That's the one that everybody noticed. That's the one that got the airplay. Well, yeah, I realize that people like sensationalism. That's why, National Geographic and this other guy's newspaper get people to read them, because there's like sensational news in it. But we have to come up with something. At least I do. Let me say it that way instead of we. I don't want to get preachy. I do, because, you know, I grew up with genocide survivors. I grew up with grandparents who remembered those stories and told me. And these are not easy stories, and they shouldn't be taken lightly. When you say our wounds are still open, no, they're not. Your wounds are not open. The wounds of that generation were open. And last year, if you remember, I found a picture. 1927, basically 5-6 years after the genocide came to an end. It's of the first Armenian church community here in Los Angeles. And there they are, several hundred people. I want to say a few, I don't know how many people. Several hundred people are photographed in this church picnic, which takes place on 4th of July, here where these new immigrants, whose wounds were still open, they were all genocide survivors in this picture, and they are celebrating their new home, 4th of July, Independence Day, here in America. And not only that, you look at their faces. Yeah, if you look really closely, you could see the scarring from past, but you would never know if you didn't look for it. You just look at them, and there's smiles, there's dignity. There's dignity. There's nobody cursing at the Turks. They're just sitting there and enjoying a day, thanking God that they're alive, as they have their priest right in the middle. Now, here's the interesting thing. We talk about genocide, and we talk about how horrible it is. And we as Armenians know the stories. We have evidence. We have proof. And we keep having to prove it to people. Why? 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 What is this big obsession with having to prove it to people? To me, that's that's like not honoring the sacred memory of those who fell. I don't have to prove it to anybody. What people need to do is open their eyes and see it's there. It's like, you know, getting up and saying, like, you have to prove something to me. Every few years, you have to prove that you can operate a vehicle. You have to take a test. I don't know what it is, every 10 years or whatever now. I haven't taken one in a long time. You have to prove that you could do it, right? Well, you don't need to prove the genocide. It's been proven. It's there. And if somebody doesn't want to accept it, it's just like I said earlier, they've changed the channel. You're not going to accept it. What you need to do is be at terms with it. Be content with what you have right now and understand that we've moved beyond genocide. And so as Armenians, we need to start thinking about others. Others who are suffering in the world today. And once we can make that change, that vision change, we start understanding that we have a responsibility inside of the global community. See, we haven't transitioned to that point. And I guess that's my frustration after this week. Having gone through surgery a few weeks ago, I wasn't able to accept all the speaking engagements for April 24th. I usually get a few. And one of them that I feel bad that I missed out on was that USC, UCLA, the students, the ASAs, had asked me to come and speak. I think it was at UCLA, and I just couldn't physically do it. But I did go out to St. Francis. It's a Catholic-run school here in the Southern California area, college preparatory, 600 students. Of them, about 50, that's about 8% of them, were Armenian. The rest are, so you've got basically fertile ground where you could talk. And that was my message. My message was that this is not about just Armenian genocide. It's about genocide and explaining what genocide is. You know, a lot of times people think it's like a war. It's not a war. In genocide, it is illegal. It is illegal not to kill the enemy. The people who've been identified by the state as needing to be exterminated. It is illegal not to kill them. That's a big difference. Dr. Martin Luther King said it very nicely. He says, I want you to remember that everything that Hitler did in Nazi Germany was legal. Yeah, because that was the law. When Talat Pasha gets up, I think it's May 15th document, 1915. He says, we've given the orders, and now anybody who goes against those orders can no longer function in the government. So if you are in the government, if you are in the armed services, and you see an Armenian there, and you don't kill them, you don't take them out, you don't exterminate them, you don't put them on a death march, then you are guilty. You have gone against the law. That's quite different from war, isn't it? And it's a systematic program. In fact, I got to the slide. We were talking about kids. When I went to Rwanda, we saw children's skulls. And my question immediately is, why would they kill children? Well, because their answer was because the children turn into adults. And when I found that one community, I've shared this story many times, the one community of what I would call gray-haired people. They weren't elderly. They were in their 40s, 50s, maybe 30s, 30 to 50, I'd say, in that age. About 200 of them. One of the interesting things inside of Rwanda was that I had gotten there 10 years after the genocide. There were no gray-haired people. Everybody was young. Well, yeah, it figures, because they are all people that survived the genocide, and they were just the young kids. Now they were in their late teens, early 20s. And it didn't hit me until the fourth day. And I said, like, hey, there's nobody who's got gray hair. And they said, well, let's take you to a camp. And they took me to a camp of widows. And there I met about 200 of them. And the reason why they were allowed to live was because they were all infected with HIV/AIDS. Are you trying to figure it out? Well, if they've got AIDS, that means the only thing that they can do is infect others. So keep them alive. That's why they were kept alive, so that they could do the dirty work. In other words, when I say that genocide is a systematic approach to annihilating an entire group of people, yeah, there is a system. We kill the people, but we also ensure that future generations can no longer be there. And so when you think about the absurdity of this kind of hatred, this kind of dialogue, you come to terms with the reality that genocide is something that needs to be stopped. And it begins with hatred. So one of the biggest challenges that I've had in talking about genocide issues is to talk without instigating new hatred. And I see this all over. People getting up, and this is what really upsets me. We get up and we talk about the Armenian genocide. And this is a challenge. I'm throwing it out to you if you're concerned about this. Challenge yourself. Can you talk about the Armenian genocide without promoting more hatred toward the Turks? I mean, it doesn't make sense to talk about genocide, about annihilation of a group of people, while promoting the annihilation of another group of people, or hatred towards another group of people. And the reality is that those people are not probably the ones you hate. Yeah, there's a few people in government, but most people don't even have a clue about the Armenian genocide. It's not taught in Turkey. So you think about it, if you're living in Turkey and you go to school, you go to the public schools, and you're being taught a lot of things, and this story is not included in there. And then someone comes along and says, oh, you know, your grandparents killed my grandparents. Horrible people. They committed genocide. You go, wait, hold it. I'm just hearing this right now. What are you talking about? Yeah, you know, you gotta understand the entire perspective. Armenians in the entire world were, I heard the new statistic, 11 million, okay? And there are 10 million Armenians on the planet that I know. There is 11 million, they said the other day. Let's go with the 11 million and let's cut it in half, because you know that most of them are kind of like here and there, not really connected to anything. So you got about your critical mass is right at about 5 million people. What are you going to do with 5 million people? Well, that's a big number. But think about, of that 5 million, only 2 million live in a small little area called Armenia. And of that 5 million people who do have opinions, I'd say there's about 5 million different opinions about this or that. And so when you're talking about like something like genocide as a historical event, great, you know, I mean, flood the airwaves, let it be printed, let it come out. But when you're talking to people who want to listen, this is really one of the big problems I think we have in the world today, is that we're flooding people with information. And what are you going to do with, how are you going to process that? You know, just a week ago or so, somebody leaked some information from the United States military, and he got criticized and everything. And everybody's saying, oh, free speech. What are you doing with that information? So they've leaked some information about the military. What are you doing about it? I can understand that there are people for whom that's important, but what are you doing with it? What is everybody so excited about? Same thing with the church, right? Okay, we understand about this priest or that priest, but what are you doing with that information? Do you go to church? Do you care? Do you see that priest? Do you, you know, it's just kind of like interesting. We're involved in everybody else's life except our own. And I think this is one of the biggest things that religion and especially Christianity can do. It's a call for introspection into our life. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Make me. Not make the church, make me an instrument of your peace. In other words, let me get it. Let me take those movements. Let's take a break right now, as we always do, give you a lot of stuff to digest, and we'll come back and talk some more, okay? We take a moment to digest with a little bit of music. Here's what I selected for today.
Let there be peace on earth.
there be peace, and let it begin with me. I love that, huh? Isn't that beautiful? That is Vincent Gill. If it's off of an album called Wings of a Dove. It's a double album. I don't know where I got this from. It's a beautifully packaged double album, and has all kinds of neat stuff on it. But when I checked out A Song for Peace, I can't think of something more relevant to talk about this day after April 24th, something more important, that peace has to begin with each of us taking responsibility and dumping the violence, you know. I mean, you want peace, you got to dump the violence at some point. And anyway, I thought it was an appropriate one. I'll have a link on today's show notes to the song so you could support the artist and listen to some of his other good stuff too, okay? Well, we are back on this week after April 24th. I think it's a great time, just like Easter gives us a time to reflect on our Christian upbringing, our Christian values, what it means to be a Christian in light of the resurrection, in the shadow of the crucifixion. Also, April 24th, April 25th should give us cause to pause and think about what it means to be an Armenian. What is that Armenian element to our identity? And it's something that I've searched for years. Searched not in the sense that, hey, what am I and everything. No, but let it have meaning. Let that word Armenian have meaning. Like, let it not just be something that we just slap on April 24th and then forget about on the 25th, the 26th, and so on. And I think it's important that we do this because there's just not enough people doing it. That's the whole reason. There's no critical mass. When I think of critical mass, there's two stories that always come to my mind. One is I remember during the Iraqi war in 1991, I think it was, and the NATO powers were going against Iraq. And the war broke out, and Tony Blair was in London and saying that he was committing British troops to this war effort. And there was 1 million people that protested. 1 million people in London, in England, they protested. And I remember that it had no meaning. They continued and they went to war. And my point here is that even 1 million people protesting is not that critical mass. The second story I always remember is right here where I live in California. The official language, of course, is English, but Spanish is the unofficial second language of this state. I mean, there are places where you could speak Spanish. You can speak Spanish and get away with it. Why? Because we have a large Mexican population over here. Mexican who had originally been here. There was people who came in here, settlers who came in here. The Catholic Church came in, brought in their missionaries and so on. Long story, which is not the point of this particular statement that I'm making, just the fact that here we are and Spanish has overtaken, has been the main dominant second language. Why? Because there is critical mass, because there are enough people that are speaking Spanish that by necessity, Spanish becomes this second language. And I always think about that when we talk about Armenia, when you talk about the small little space that we do have and the large amount of space that we used to call Western Armenia or historic Armenia. And there's always people who are talking about we have to get the lands back and we got to, yeah, that's great. But how are you going to populate it? How are you going to populate it? You don't have that critical mass. Really, if you're going to do anything, if you're really serious about that, take a 200-year break. You know, take a 200-year break, procreate, create enough offspring so that in 200 years you do have critical mass. You do have 150 million, 200 million people that without guns, without weapons, you just kind of walk onto the lands and Yeah, whether you like it or not, there's all these Armenians there, right? I mean, that's not a major military strategy, but it is a practical strategy without the military, right? And this is all I'm saying today, is that we've got to start thinking about different scenarios. You know, we go back to that statement, you fight fire with fire. Well, yeah, that's basically the model that we have. And we've got to get away from that model. Just because somebody said it and this is how we deal with it, with strength and might and everything. No, you fight fire with a hose, with water. And I mentioned this at St. Francis the other day. So many people were just so receptive. Yeah, we're ready for that. Like, we have this situation right now in Ukraine. And I'm very sad to say that here in the United States, the only way that we are reacting to it is by sending military support, by sending military weaponry to fight a war. Well, basically, we're in that war, whether you like to say it's a declared war or not, we're in it. And, you know, there's got to be other solutions. Same thing with Artsakh or in Armenia. We've got to think of other solutions. And I've put it out there. I've put it out there that we've got to start leveraging what we have. It's very Archimedes was way ahead of his time. He could have been Armenian because he understood that, hey, if you want to do something big, he says, give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum and I could move the earth. I could move the world. Well, I could do those miracles. I could do those big things. Jesus Christ said it, right? He said, have the faith the size of a mustard seed, and you could say to this mountain, just come up and move, and it will move. Well, what did he mean? Was he lying to us? Of course not. Of course not. But it's a different idea. It's a different mindset. That faith is incredible. It's what moves mountains. And to tap into that, you only need to open your eyes. Open to your eyes to what's around you. The fact that we are, as an Armenian people, 2 weeks after Easter, we are celebrating another life, another resurrection, will put you in that mindset of understanding that there is a power. The minute you come into that victim mentality and start saying, well, look at us, look how bad we are, our wounds are still open. No. You can't say that when you're sitting around in the comfort of your first world country. You're sitting around, and I know you are because you're listening to this. To listen to this, you must have some kind of device that connects to the internet. You must have some kind of device that can be, that could be broadcasting this. Okay, that takes money. So you are in really relatively compared to most of the world, you're in good shape. So, okay, yeah, you know what the statement is. I'm better than most, not as good as some. Okay, I'll give you that. I'll be the first one to admit that for me. I am better off than most, right? I mean, yeah, I'm not a millionaire. I'm not as good as some, but I'm better off than most when you look at the complexion of the world. And when you start thinking in those terms, you say that, okay, if I am better off, can I bring about this peace? Can I do that? Can I do that which I am thinking others need to do? And we need to start at the very, very basic, is start with the idea that, yes, we are not victims. We are victors. To change in that mindset, you need some tangible means of expression. And that's where In Issues comes in. I mean, you know what? When we go out there on once a month and feed the homeless, when we go out there and we hold these famines to help the hungry children in Africa, when we go out there and we donate blood to others, you know what a difference of the mindset that is? All these years we've been told that we've been victims. And like I said, there's people who want to still live in that mentality. They will make these huge drawings of veins popping out of arms and saying, yeah, our wounds are still open. Nah, yeah. Okay, go ahead and victimize yourself. There's still people who will say, woe is us, the government doesn't accept our genocide. Woe is us, you know, when will people hear about our genocide? You need to step out of the way. And to do that, you need to start seeing other genocides. You need to start seeing yourself as a member of a global community where there are pains and there are sufferings, and you now become the example for that. I told you about that shock that I had when I walked into the Museum of Genocide in Rwanda. This is in 2006. Here we were in the United States, people begging Bush, the president at the time, the younger Bush, to accept the genocide, to call it what it was, to recognize the genocide. And he was refusing. Condoleezza Rice made these huge statements. Adam Schiff called her on it. Big, big controversy over here. Then I go in the middle of Rwanda, and there's this genocide museum where the Armenian genocide, Armenians are the heroes there. You open up the door into this museum, and it starts off with the first genocide of the 20th century. And there we are. It's the Armenians right there. And I've shared this with you with the pictures and everything. It's like, let's get with the program. If people don't accept it, it's not your problem. You need to get out of the way and start saying, hey, there are other genocides. Do you know what's happening right now in the Sudan? I mean, right now, today, as I'm speaking, there's people firing at each other. And these are the beginnings of genocidal policies. We know that in the Congo. We know that in Darfur just a few years ago. And we know what's going on right now in Artsakh. If that's not genocide, I don't know what it is. What is? They're basically saying we don't want Armenians here and we'll do away with the Armenians. So that now, that issue in Artsakh is not an Armenian problem. It is a world problem. To get to that world stage, we need to get off of the 1915 bandwagon. We need to use that 1915 to show that, hey, look where we were and where we are today. And solidify it by connecting it with the only hope that we have, the only hope we've ever had, is connecting it with the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Because people understand that. People understand when you are people of faith. See, we try to do it all without faith. No, you need that faith. That's the one element that's always missing. I'm doing this series right now called The 20 Years Ago Today. It is, I got the words, of course, from the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper. It was 20 years ago today. Sgt. Pepper taught the band to play. And I was just sitting there at Palm Sunday and realizing it was 20 years ago that we started the Armenian Church Youth Ministry. And I got to tell you, it was an experiment. It was a 15-year experiment, which we ran and ran successfully. We were very proud of it, of all the achievements, and mostly we were proud of the miracles that were coming out of it. And, you know, during these past few weeks that I've been doing this series, I've been opening up to, wow, I had forgotten some of this stuff. I'm going back through my notebooks. I'm going back through some of the writings that we had done, the productions that we had done, and I realized, wow, thank God that we have this particular, the next step, because the next step was born out of the youth ministry in 2008. So we had already been working for about 5 years. So in our fifth year, we pushed the limits. And this series is talking about all these things that we did. Now, let me back up a little bit. April 24th, what's the common talk that we have? You go into the Armenian schools and you hear what they're telling the kids about April 24th. It's always this negative thing about this is what happened to us. Nobody cares about us and nobody listened to us. And today nobody cares about us. Well, think about it for a moment. Think about it. You are a young person. Yeah, can you do that? Rewind your life back there. You're a young person and you're being told that you were dispensable, not indispensable. You're dispensable. The government, the Ottoman Empire, decided that they don't need Armenians. Not only that, but nobody else is going to listen to you. Nobody else even cared about you. And now you're sitting around and justifying it to the world. You're saying, look at us. This genocide really happened. Please come and validate that it happened. So what is the signal that's being sent home to that young kid? What is that young kid walking away with? Well, he's saying, well, okay, maybe I'm a second-class citizen. Yeah, I mean, people aren't listening to me. Well, maybe my voice doesn't count. Do you realize that successful Armenians don't go into this? They don't go into that woe is me thing. You look at someone like Kirk Krikorian, who financially was successful. I don't know on any other program what he was successful. But I can tell you that he was successful financially. That's something we can all agree upon. A couple of years ago, I read his biography, The Gambler. Very fascinating, fascinating story. During his life, I was fascinated by it. And, you know, he had made a promise. It made a promise that he wanted to get the genocide story out to people. And I remember through the years following his story, because he had tried with different versions of 40 Days of Musadal. When I saw the promise a few years ago, and he named it The Promise, I sat through that movie thinking, what? Okay, what's the promise? This guy's in love with her. She's in love with him. Is that the promise and everything? And, you know, I got to tell you, when the credits came on and I saw Kirk Krikorian's name, it just clicked. I was in tears that day. That's the promise. He promised to get the story out. There it is. He did it. And he did it his way. Let there be peace and let it begin with me. I mean, it's that simple. We've got to start taking the responsibility. I'm not talking about becoming a millionaire so you can do that. I'm talking about the resources that you have, whatever it may be. People have the ability to write. People have the ability to talk. Others have the ability to connect. Whatever your resources are, whatever your talents are, use them. But use them in a global way. Rather than just talking about the Armenian genocide, start talking about what's going on in Ukraine. Not as, hey, we can win or we can't win those horrible Russians. Start talking about what's going on in Korea. Not about, oh, that horrible madman up in North Korea. Yeah, you may think that. Okay, but the dialogue has to change, and it has to change with us. Blessed are the peacemakers, says Jesus Christ. Why? They will be called sons of God, children of God. Who is Jesus? He was the ultimate peacemaker. He was the Son of God. And his peace, the message that he talked about, was not confined to a group of people. Yeah, he came and he saw these Jewish people who were saying, we are the chosen people. He said, that's good. That's good that you're saying that. But let me tell you something which comes from God. You're all chosen. Everyone is chosen. Everyone is God's creation. And yeah, you could claim whatever you want, but it's not going to work. Not in the eyes of God, because he's a God of all. Anyway, I'm going to take a break right now. I have another nice little story that I want to share with you after Susie makes her announcement. I'll be back in just a moment, okay?
Before getting back to the Next Step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The Next Step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you, all of you, for listening, for caring, for praying for this this ministry, Epostle.net. Got to tell you something really wild. Part of the 20th anniversary of our youth ministry, I've been doing this series, as I told you a few moments ago, about what we were going through. And just a couple nights ago, I said serendipity, and then I was corrected. A few nights ago, I did one of the 20 years ago, and I talked about one of the early programs of the youth ministry. It was called the 30-Hour Famine, which we orchestrated with World Vision. And it was a very special program that we did for several years, collected hundreds, if not, I'm sure we went over the million mark in getting aid to people in need, people in countries that were impoverished, that had starvation issues, that needed clean water, and so on and so on. We worked with World Vision, and I did this program just, what was it, four nights ago? If maybe it was on the 24th or the 25th. Anyway, I did a show. I will put a link on today's show notes, okay? Check it out, because it was interesting. It was very, very interesting. And we published it at night. The daily broadcasts go out at midnight California time, okay? So Pacific Daylight Time that we're in right now, that's when they go out. So I get up the next morning, and in my email, there is a letter from one of the directors of World Vision. Yeah. I mean, it kind of like shocked me. Like, wow, did they listen? No, they didn't listen. It was a letter sent to me. Father Movsesyan had said, "We've been seeing what you're doing. We've been looking at your website and very impressed with all the things that you're doing. And we'd like a chance to talk to you about World Vision." And you know, I'm like thinking, what? What? Like, what's the timing on this? I mean, I just published this like a few hours ago, and I looked at the timestamp, and it was sent 2 or 3 hours before the daily message had gone out. So we record those daily messages the day before, and they get published at midnight. So basically, the timing of it was relatively around the same time that we were doing this show and that they wrote to us. And I wrote back to them. I said, "Is this serendipity?" And they said, "No, it's divine intervention." And they got me there. And so we made an appointment to meet in the next few weeks. I'm very excited about that. You know, in 2009, when Varajan and I went to Etchmiadzin, one of the big excitements, unexpected excitements was we were walking through Etchmiadzin one day, and it was during our 30-hour famine years that we were doing it. And we had these bags that were given to us by World Vision, very, very handy bags where you could put your work in it and walk around. And as we were visitors in Armenia, we were staying at the monastery as a guest of His Holiness. And we were walking in the courtyard with these bags, and somebody stopped us. "Hey, you've got World Vision bags. Do you know that we're inside?" And we went over, and in Etchmiadzin, in the adjacent building, World Vision was having a Sunday school conference teaching Sunday school teachers how to teach the gospel right there in Armenia, in Etchmiadzin proper. And you don't know how happy I was, because, you know, for years while we were doing this, we had a lot of people who were complaining and mocking us, like, "How dare you do this? You know, you should focus in on Armenians. Just focus on Armenians. How could you be raising funds for people who aren't Armenian, who aren't even Christian, who we don't even know who they are, whose color of skin is different?" And they went through the whole gamut of things. But we stuck to our guns and we did it. And do you know how happy I was that here we are in the center of the Armenian Church, with the permission and the authority of the Catholicos of all Armenians, His Holiness Karekin II, World Vision was teaching teachers how to teach the gospel in the villages, and they were assembled at Etchmiadzin for these classes. Anyway, needless to say, we had a great time going in there and talking to some of the people there, but I can never get that out of my head. And it's just a reminder that you do the right thing. At the end, God works all the other details out for you. And so we continue to do those right things. As we see it, it's walking in the shoes of others. Is there a better expression of empathy? I think not. All right, that does it for our show today. I hope you enjoyed it. I have not been able to go to church. You cannot understand how difficult that is for me when all my life Sundays have been occupied with church. But I try to do other church stuff during the Sunday morning, including following on the internet. I'm very thankful we have this ability. But hopefully by Mother's Day in a couple weeks, I'm planning to be back and into action. I want to thank you for your prayers and all the nice notes and messages you've been sending me. All right, so that does it for today's show. I want to invite you to epostle.net, where you will find all kinds of stuff, including daily messages, including our show Gira Adir's, all kinds of good stuff over there. And take some time to explore around. You'll be surprised what you find. On behalf of my producer, Susie, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take
Stand by for disclaimer.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Epostle.net. Apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanded universe.
I forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are. Bye.